Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The UK slides toward recession, plus the FTC broadens its regulatory authority, and Russia says it's completed its withdrawal from the Ukrainian city of Kherson.
Clearing Kherson could be an enormous task for the Ukrainians. The flip side is Ukraine, having had this string of success, will want to continue showing that they can maintain the initiative and that support from the West is delivering.
It's Friday, November 11th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal, and here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The UK economy shrank in the 3 months through September, the country's Office for National Statistics said this morning, with GDP 0.7% lower on an annualized basis in the third quarter compared to the 3 months through June. Wall Street Journal reporter Paul Hannon says the UK is now the first country in the group of seven large advanced democracies to record economic contraction.
The UK recession is likely to last through next year, possibly into 2024. And that will partly depend on what the UK government decides to do next week when it announces tax rises and spending cuts that it says are needed to get a grip on its rising debt levels.
We are exclusively reporting that South Korea will, for the first time, sell arms to the US for use by Ukrainian forces fighting Russia. A confidential deal that reflects a global scramble for munitions after months of war with Russia. U.S. officials familiar with the deal said the U.S. will purchase 100,000 rounds of artillery ammunition that will be delivered to Ukraine, enough to supply Kyiv's artillery units for at least several weeks of intensive combat. The South Korea-provided arms will enable the U.S. to supply Ukraine without digging deeper into American artillery inventories, which U.S. officials have acknowledged are dwindling quickly. A federal judge in Texas has struck down the Biden administration's student debt forgiveness plan, imperiling a key administration priority that would have canceled up to $20,000 in student loans for tens of millions of borrowers. The Justice Department is appealing the verdict, a spokeswoman said. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre criticized the ruling and said the Education Department will hold on to borrowers' applications for debt relief so it can quickly process them if the courts allow the program to move forward. Elon Musk has said bankruptcy is a possibility for Twitter, adding to the chaos that has engulfed the social media platform in the 2 weeks since the billionaire took over. Musk's comment came in an all-hands meeting with Twitter staff on Thursday, according to people familiar with the matter, and on the heels of a memo to employees in which he warned of the dire economic challenges facing the company. Chinese stocks surged today after top officials in Beijing said they would try to minimize the economic impact from the country's zero-COVID policy and promptly eased some of its quarantine restrictions. Journal China Markets reporter Rebecca Fung in Hong Kong has the details.
The national health authorities laid out new measures, basically shortened the quarantine days and then also eased some of the lockdown restrictions. And that was why the stocks surged a lot in the afternoon. And analysts are basically saying that the measures are definitely a step in the positive direction, but it remains to be seen how local governments implement these measures. But any kind of lifting of the lockdowns in China will be gradual.
In other market news today, Japanese tech investor SoftBank reported a third quarter profit of more than $21 billion after gains from the sale of its stake in Chinese e-commerce company Alibaba offset losses at its Vision Fund. U.S. investors, meanwhile, will be digesting preliminary consumer sentiment readings for November, which are due out later today. And in Egypt, President Biden is set to address the UN's annual climate change summit before embarking on a trip to Asia that will culminate in a meeting with Chinese leader Xi Jinping on Monday. The U.S. Federal Trade Commission is broadening its mandate. The regulator announced on Thursday that it plans to expand its interpretation of the century-old statute that created it in a move that could allow the agency to bring more lawsuits against businesses. Journal reporter John McKinnon works out of our Washington bureau and covers high-tech policy for us, and he joins us now with the details on this latest move by the commission under Chairwoman Lina Khan. John, thank you for being with us. Pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
So tell us, what is the FTC saying here that it has newly the authority to do?
Well, a lot. The FTC is saying that it has very broad authority now to enforce this century-old federal ban on what are known as unfair methods of competition. That sounds incredibly broad, I think, and it actually is incredibly broad, and it's a lot broader than what they had been doing for the last 30 or 40 years.
Okay, so if this was in their founding charter, why weren't they doing that?
They were doing it for many decades, and there was a backlash against the FTC, and basically by 2015, had decided not to enforce anything beyond basically the laws that are enforced by the Justice Department in the competition area. And Chairwoman Lina Khan now is saying that was a big mistake, and she thinks the FTC has basically given away a lot of its authority over the last 30 or 40 years.
And so now that they're taking it back, what could these changes mean for companies in terms of the regulation we might expect to see from the FTC?
They mean to go after a lot of coercive conduct that businesses can engage in that don't rise to the level of monopolization under traditional antitrust law. They mean to go after a lot of misleading and deceptive conduct that businesses engage in that affects competition. And they're also trying to go after pricing conduct that businesses can engage in, predatory pricing, for instance. So it covers a pretty wide range of conduct, and it could go well beyond that.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter John McKinnon, who covers high-tech policy out of our Washington bureau. John, thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you.
Coming up, we'll look at the likely next steps of the war in Ukraine following Moscow's announcement that its troops have completed their withdrawal from the Ukrainian city of Kherson. That's after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Ukraine's forces swept toward the southern city of Kherson today, as Russian forces said they had completed a withdrawal from the area. Kherson was the only regional capital that Moscow had seized since its February invasion. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said in his nightly address late yesterday that Ukrainian forces had retaken 41 settlements as they advanced toward Kherson. So what is likely to come next in Ukraine? Joining us now to help consider that is Wall Street Journal Brussels Bureau Chief Dan Michaels. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Good to be with you.
So before we look past Kherson and talk about the broader war in Ukraine, could you just remind us of the significance of this Russian withdrawal?
Sure. It's a win for Ukraine. How that fits into the bigger picture will come clear over time, but this was a significant gain for Russia early in the invasion. It was the only provincial capital that the Russians captured. They were very proud to have it. Russian President Vladimir Putin had essentially called it part of Russia not long ago, and now it is no longer part of Russia. Russian troops have been pulling back for a while. How long isn't exactly clear, but the Ukrainians have been attacking and essentially besieging the city since late August. The city is right along a very wide river, the Dnipro. There are only a few bridges across it, and those bridges were among the Ukrainians' earliest targets, which meant that it was almost impossible for Russians to resupply their troops and for the troops that were in the city to get out And the Ukrainians took advantage of that by bombarding the city and putting enormous pressure on the Russian troops there. And what we've seen this week is the result of that.
Dan, even if it does take some time to verify that Russia is in fact withdrawing from around Kherson, is it safe to say Ukraine still does seem to have the momentum in this conflict?
Yes, unquestionably. So around the time that Ukraine started besieging Kherson in late August, early September, they also, in another part of the country up in the north near the city of Kharkiv, launched a very different offensive. The terrain around there is quite open, villages are fairly spread out, and the Ukrainians launched a very fast, mobile attack and fairly quickly regained hundreds of square miles of territory. So really, the Ukrainians have had a couple of months of really unanswered successes against Russia's invading forces.
And yet, as you report, apparent success around Kherson does not necessarily beget further success elsewhere. Why is that?
None of this has been easy for Ukraine, but what they've done over the past, say, 2 months has probably been the easiest. What would come next is going to be harder for a number of reasons. The terrain and the geography get a little bit more challenging. The further east in Ukraine they go into territory that has been captured by Russia, it gets more urban and bigger cities are easier to defend. Urban warfare is brutal, requires lots of troops and ammunition and equipment. The Ukrainians have wanted not to kill their troops, and so they will be hesitant about that. Further east gets closer to Russia, so Russia's supply lines get shorter, making it easier for them to resupply their troops. Along with that, we have the calendar. We are now in the rainy season in Ukraine. The fall rains turn fields and some roads into mud, making it very difficult to move armored vehicles. And to gain and hold territory, the rainy season is then followed by winter, when it gets really cold. And the Ukrainians have gotten a lot of winter gear from the West, but fighting in winter is harder. Things slow down. The hope there is that the Ukrainians will be better positioned than the Russians. So while everyone will suffer in the winter, there is a hope that the Ukrainians will suffer less than the Russians and be able to capitalize on perhaps a slight advantage.
So it sounds like there are reasons why the Ukrainian offensive then may need to slow for various reasons, but one does not get the sense from your recent reporting that Kyiv is backing off.
Definitely not admitting they're backing off, but two things. One, military strategists say that fighting reaches a point where troops need to regroup. They call it culmination, where you have an objective, you've achieved it, you need to stop, sort of catch your breath and plan the next move. Clearing Kherson could be an enormous task for the Ukrainians, especially if the Russians bombard it or have booby-trapped it. The flip side is Ukraine, having had this string of successes, showing that it could capitalize on what has been given by its Western supporters, will want to continue showing that they can maintain the initiative on the battlefield and that support from the West is delivering and that the West has made the right bet in backing Ukraine.
That was Wall Street Journal Brussels bureau chief Dan Michaels. Dan, as always, thank you for the update.
Always good to be with you. Thanks.
And finally, the weekend is almost upon us, and after a stressful work week, why not unwind by grabbing a shovel and digging a hole? Apparently, people around the world have discovered the joy of digging holes. TikTok now peppered with people showing off their prized subsurface triumphs, some of which are 5 or more feet deep. Wall Street Journal reporter James Hookway spoke to artists and scientists who said that in a world full of distractions, a mundane, repetitive action can sometimes offer a welcome change of pace.
There are people who talk about the idea of hyperfocus, which is the idea of reaching a space in your mind and consciousness by repeatedly doing something physical. It doesn't have to be complicated, the simpler the better. But the way you do that, if you keep on doing it, it helps to unlock various problems in your mind if you do it enough. And in the story, we talk about various scientists, computer specialists, and others who have turned to digging as a way to crack particularly difficult problems they're working on.
And if that has you inspired, just note that park rangers kindly request that you fill in your hole when you're done. And that's What's News for Friday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Have a great weekend, happy digging, and thanks for listening.